Today on Doomed! Amazon? Seems like some people wish they would Amazoff. Eh? You like that, folks? That's a good one, right? Anyway, welcome to today's episode of Doomed. My name is Matt Binder. You all know that by now. And today we're talking Amazon. You might have heard the big announcement that Amazon has finally made their real long-awaited decision on where they're opening their new second headquarters. Surprise, surprise to me, one of those headquarter locations is right here in Queens, New York. And joining me on the show is actually an old dear friend of mine from Queens, New York, Lena Afridi, Director of Economic Development Policy at ANHD, which is the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development. Lena, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time, actually. Me and Lena go way back.
Way, way back. Like at least 15 years. That far back.
At least, actually. Hold on, I'm pulling us up on YouTube so people could see us. There we go. You mentioned it in your tweet promoting this episode. We met in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember it very clearly. We were on the Q76 because we went to two different schools, but that was where our line kind of intersected. And one of us, I don't remember who it was trying to give the other a flyer to a show in College Point at St. Fidelis.
It actually might have been you, because as everyone who listens to this podcast and watches this show knows, I am a terrible promoter. Terrible at it. Can't do it for my life.
I remember when you were doing it. So, you were good at it.
And not so much. I mean, I did have a band at the time. But honestly, I feel like everyone else was much better at bringing people out than me.
No. Okay, listeners and viewers, Matt Binder had an extremely popular punk band. Extremely popular when we were like 17, 18. You guys played with Leftover Crack. Everyone remembers that. Everyone knows that.
In the area, we were.
Yeah, in the area. But that's all that counts.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's all that counts.
Yeah, those were good. Now you have me reminiscing. I don't want to do the rest of the show. I just want to talk about old times. No, but actually, this is really going to affect you and me. And not to, you know, I don't want people listening to this to go, I don't know, if they don't live in New York, because there are people listening to this, surprisingly, all over the world. I have the stats. They're going to probably go, oh, this is about Queens and New York. It's a hyper-local-centric show. I'm going to tune out. No, no, no. This actually affects everybody who lives in a – well, everybody, period. But especially if you live in a city that even sent a proposal to Amazon, this actually affects you. And I believe they were only there were literally hundreds of cities sent proposals in North America. And I think in the U.S., only like three or four states, and this is like Montana, North Dakota, those states, and I guess because they just assumed they weren't going to be even thought of to begin with. Those are the only states, literally, those three or four type of states didn't send the proposal. So, you know, if you're living anywhere in the U.S., that matters. Sorry, Montana and North Dakota listeners. You're going to care about this podcast episode.
Totally. Yeah, so, I mean, Amazon, the cities were trying to lure them in any way they could. Like, Columbus, Ohio was prepared to put together a task force to deal with an unacceptable murder rate, which I think any murder rate is unacceptable, but specifically to lure Amazon in, that was part of their package. You know, other cities were saying that they weren't going to be charging them payroll taxes. In Boston, they offered to give them basically make it easier for Amazon employees to buy homes in Boston, so give them like a tax cut on buying homes. So wild, wild packages, but you all dodged a bullet. So we're the ones who got stuck with it in the end.
Right. But actually, and I want to bring this up later because it's sort of like a, you know, the cherry on top here of what Amazon's getting out of all this. But if your city or town submitted an application and you didn't get chosen, oh, don't worry. Amazon's going to surely use the data you sent over to them, your city sent over to them, free of charge.
True. That's true. Yeah, let's talk about that later. Yeah. There's some points to that. Yeah.
So let's rewind to around this time last year when Amazon announced they were going to be opening up a second headquarters. Everybody knows or should know that they have a headquarters already in Seattle, Washington. And they announced that they were bringing the second headquarters to one lucky location. I almost feel like doing like a, you know, a Bob Barker-esque come on down, because they sort of had a competition. Not sort of. They literally had a competition where they wanted cities to send proposals over in an effort to woo Amazon to essentially choose their little city as their the home of Amazon HQ2.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Right. So cities did this, and fast forward to this week, Amazon announced that they were actually going to be splitting these two locations, their headquarters, into two locations, one in Arlington, Virginia, and one in Queens, New York, specifically Long Island City. And the terms of this deal, the deals for the two headquarter locations came out, and both cities are going to be giving Amazon a massive tax cuts, tax breaks, subsidies to essentially move to what are really two major cities. These are cities where we shouldn't be, especially New York, we shouldn't be offering anything for a company as large as Amazon to come here. In fact, they should be begging New York to let them in.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, you cut out for a second there. So if you lose me, just let me know.
All right, definitely. So Lena, your expertise here is really, you know, tell us actually a little bit about what you do with the ANHD, because I noticed that you and your organization have been really some of the loudest voices speaking out to these concerns that people in New York City have now that Amazon's moving into town.
Sure. So really quickly about me, I'm trained as a city planner, which is funny because I'm doing kind of the opposite of what city planners are supposed to do in some ways. There's some of us that are kind of like, you know, vanguards in some ways or radicals in others. So at ANHD, I'm the director of economic development policy. ANHD is a membership organization of 101 community groups all over New York City. We started out when the Bronx was burning. A bunch of groups got together and said, look, we need to do something. We need to have a united front in some ways, and let's create an organization that can kind of figure out campaign strategy for us, figure out what we should be doing and how we should be moving forward as like as a movement. So we started doing that 4 years ago, and then 5 years ago or so, our membership organizations came to us and said, look, you've been working on affordable housing, but no housing is affordable without a good job. So you all need to start doing something on equitable economic development. And we don't know exactly what that means, but you guys need to figure it out. So from that, really, when I started, that's kind of what the conversation was.
Wow.
So from that, we have broken it down into three main areas that I'll go over super quick. One is on small business anti-displacement. So like when Amazon comes, if they come, if there's a bodega down the street and the bodega gives the people food on credit and that bodega disappears, where do the single parents who depended on that bodega go then, right? So thinking about like communities beyond just housing, like it's beyond where do you just sleep. It's where you form friendships and bonds and culture. And so that has been a really big focus on what we do. And then the jobs piece of it that I will get to eventually later on in the conversation. And then lastly, another piece of what we do is protecting industrial manufacturing land from being rezoned. So this is the land use component of our work, because manufacturing jobs tend to be better paying jobs than, let's say, retail, which the city has been focusing on more and more. So this Amazon deal kind of touches on everything that we work on. We work on protecting tenants from being displaced from their neighborhoods and their communities. We work on protecting the land use process and making sure that it's overseen equitably. And then we work on protecting small businesses and making sure that good jobs go to local people. So when the whole Amazon thing happened, we weren't blindsided because this is not a new thing, right? Like, Amazon coming in is a big deal, but it is part of a longstanding trajectory of what people think about when they think about economic development, or what people think about when they traditionally think about economic development, right? Like, it's the way that cities have thought of bringing money into their municipalities. It's relied on corporations. It's relied on things like bringing in stadiums. You know, so this is not a new model. It's just an egregious example of an existing model. And I can talk about that if you want to hear more about historic examples of.
No, please go into that, because really what we're looking at here with Amazon coming in, it's not something new. And I don't think, you know, a lot of people are hearing about this now, and they're hearing about this. And interestingly enough, this is sort of an issue, again, for different reasons for each, but it's sort of bringing people across the ideological spectrum together. Obviously, yes, conservatives are knocking this for a very different reason than, you know, progressives and leftists. But, you know, I think in many ways, without that sort of historical sort of focus, that knowledge of how we got to this point, I think people are really just not understanding, you know, for those who are saying, what's wrong with Amazon coming to you? You should be happy you're getting jobs. Well, what we're seeing actually is one of the richest companies on the planet. The founder and CEO is the richest person on the planet. Are being essentially paid to come to a city that's going to be offering them so much more than they're going to receive in return.
Right. So, yes. So let me just talk a little bit about Queens, Long Island City, because I think people who are not from New York don't have like a real sense of the way things function here, which is very different from the rest of the country. So New York went through serious, serious disinvestment. Folks know about that. In the 70s through the 80s. And, you know, what we've seen now since like the post 9/11, really, like since 2005 or so, has been rampant development in a way that has been completely unmitigated and like unforeseen. Like, nobody thought that development was going to happen in the way that it has been happening. So and also, actually, New York City has less control on our processes than other cities do, because it was so corrupt in the 70s that the state ended up taking control of it. And we still have all those laws that say that the state has to come in and kind of approve certain things. This is especially true when it comes to rent regulation, because, you know, we have these old laws on the book to bring development back into New York. Everybody had left. Nobody wanted to be here. The state and the city were trying to figure out a way to bring companies here, lure them in. So we're using these same old packages for a context that's completely, completely different. At this point, New York is facing one of the worst placement crises that it's ever had. Homelessness is a major problem here. Economic inequity is a major problem here. On paper, we're doing great. And I mean, we are. And in so many ways, we are so lucky. Like, the economy is doing well in the city. Wages are up on the highest ends, but when you look at the big picture, inequity is actually way higher than it's ever been. So the richest people are getting richer, the poorest people are getting poorer, and middle class folks who really can't afford to stay here anymore are leaving. So it is this. People keep talking about the tale of two cities. It totally is a tale of two cities. There's a total, like, people are living in completely different worlds.
Right. You know, I would say that's, you know, what you just explained sounds like really the country as a whole. But I think, you know, when you look at New York City, as you just mentioned, it is a little bit different because, you know, we're not talking about, you know, people in one part of the state and then people in another part of the state living completely different lives, like, you know, an urban area and then like some rural area. We're literally talking about, you know, the richest of the rich are essentially living above the poorest of the poor, like literally right on top of each other.
Yeah. And, you know, Long Island City, for folks who aren't familiar with New York, it used to be just a manufacturing center. You know, like, there was nothing there besides factories until probably in the last 15 years. I mean, when we were in high school, you remember Five Points being there. Five Points
yes.
was a very well-known artist space where graffiti artists would come to, and it was known as like a cultural site, right?
If you haven't, you know, if you've ever been to New York, anybody listening, and you know, and you rode the 7 train, you most you know, and this was before what, 2 years ago, I would say, right? Is that when Five Points got?
I think it's a little bit longer, but yeah,
yeah, around 2016, right? 2016, I think. You would have noticed this giant, you know, this big building, almost like a warehouse, completely head to toe, I want to say, but you don't, that's not how you describe a building, from top to bottom, covered in graffiti, and not, you know, not just, you know, spray paint. I'm talking about amazing pieces of art. And this was called, this artist space was called Five Points. And because this is New York City and nothing nice can stay here, it was torn down to make space for, I believe they're building luxury condos there.
Yeah. And they're using, you know, the marketing is, they're using Five Points marketing to sell it. So the neighborhood was all manufacturing. There, because it's waterfront, and waterfront property in New York is valued for a lot, and it's right across the river from Midtown Manhattan. Property values went up way, way, way high. All these luxury glass condos were built. Not very many people actually live there. People bought them up just to have real estate space in the city. It's like a big thing that New York goes through as well. And you know, you have this like city of glass towers, essentially this like mini city, and then right next to it you have Queensbridge. Queensbridge is, for folks again who I mean, so many people know about it nationally because like Nas is from there, and also like it is the largest public housing complex in America.
Right.
So you have the glass towers up there, and then you have the largest public housing complex in the United States, and then you have those people living side by side for the people who are living in the glass towers, and people aren't seeing or talking to each other, and it's really easy to kind of push aside poor and working people and think about just moving forward and thinking about this like new idea for a new frontier or a new city. And that's kind of the rhetoric that politicians have been using without considering the people who have been here, the people who have been here through the toughest times, the hardest times. And one thing I want to say really quick now that I've started my rant is that a lot of places I've heard and seen reporting that Long Island City, you know, the median income of Long Island City is $130,000, and that's just not true. Like the median income of the census tract in which the Amazon site, the proposed site, is located, it might be $100,000, $130,000. I'm sorry, but that's not how neighborhoods work. It's not just a sliver. A census tract is like a very small geography, right? Like, when you talk about that very small geography, you're talking about an incredibly tiny sliver of a neighborhood. And in New York, and I think everywhere in the country, you can't just call one single street a neighborhood, and you can't expect that what happens on that one single street isn't going to impact everybody else who's living near it.
Right.
So the median income actually is like $60,000 for household, so multiple earners, and 47% of people have a bachelor's degree, which is a little bit lower than the citywide average. And it is a different picture than the one that has been painted of what this neighborhood is, what this community is, what Queens is.
Right. I mean, even if this was a rich area, like if Amazon was opening their headquarters in Manhattan or something, where, you know, the Upper East Side, I don't know, it's really going to affect the entire city.
Yeah.
We're completely dependent on and connected by the subway system here.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, I live in Flushing, and everybody knows I live in Flushing. I talk about living in Queens and specifically Flushing all the time. And I am worried about getting pushed out because I live on the 7 line.
Mm-hmm.
And the 7 train is going to be one of the major hubs, one of the major ways, modes of transportation to get to this new Amazon headquarters. And there's no doubt in my mind that any affordable area, like, first of all, I think, like, that area of Queens all along the 7 line is one of the few, like, affordable areas of this the whole city left. Jackson Heights, Elmhurst, Woodside. And what's going to happen when all these people, because this is another thing that we're going to talk about too, a little bit more. The people who were the 25,000 jobs coming to New York City, thanks to Amazon, how many of those people are going to be actually locals hired by Amazon and not people Amazon is bringing in from wherever?
Yeah. Yeah. Those are all major concerns. I mean, I also live along the 7 line still. Like, we both grew up off the 7. When I moved back to New York, when I moved back to Queens, I moved off the 7 also. And I live very, very close to where the proposed site is. And I got to tell you, even now, it's already so miserable trying to get on that train. I cannot imagine what it's going to be like later. But as far as the affordability question goes, you're totally right. It is a major concern. And it's, and the ripple effects of this development are major. They're huge. And both along the 7 line, and as you said, citywide, this is going to be something that comes up for everyone, even folks in the Bronx. And the 7 line piece of it and the speculation piece of it is that it is already starting to happen. So the Wall Street Journal reported that people are across the country are texting realtors in Long Island City and buying condos sight unseen, texting them and just saying, like, let me just buy up this spot because I know that it's going to increase in value and appreciate in value really, really quickly. And also they're seeing real estate companies or developers, real estate companies driving around potential buyers who want to purchase multiple buildings so they can just go and buy more than one building. So that happened the morning, the day after the announcement. So the day after the announcement, that started already in Long Island City. And then the ripple effects of it.
I saw reports that even in Crystal City, which is actually, and this is a whole nother thing, I don't even know if we'll even get into the Arlington side of this, but I saw that for people who aren't familiar here, when Amazon announced the both headquarter locations, the Arlington site, they called the Arlington, Virginia site, what was it, National Landing. And everyone was like, what the fuck is National Landing? We've never heard of National Landing before. And it turns out the city is actually renaming the portion of the exact location in Arlington where Amazon's headquarters too is gonna encompass part of what is known as Crystal City. And they're renaming that part of it National Landing for Amazon. Like, yeah. Amazon is actually getting to name their own portion there. I mean,
our governor renamed himself for Amazon, so I think, you know, Amazon, Cuomo, right? We might have been worse in some ways. Not the competition, we're all.
Cuomo said, for those who don't know, Cuomo, before like days before Amazon said who the two finalists were, who their picks were, Andrew Cuomo, wonderful Andrew Cuomo, comes out on, I wonder what situation we'd be in if we elected Cynthia Nixon, but that's another story for another day. Andrew Cuomo came out and said, I'll rename myself Amazon Cuomo if it gets Amazon here. And, you know, on top of all that, I feel like we're jumping all over the place here, but my brain is all over the place here for this one. Our local politicians, our local lawmakers, our local representatives, we're all shut out of this deal making.
Yeah.
It seems like this was all Cuomo, and I'm guessing whoever Cuomo surrounds himself with. I mean, they're still there, I believe, the three men in a room. I don't know if they were specifically involved in this, but they're not gone yet. It's not January 2019 yet. So it's Cuomo, and I believe de Blasio was part of this whole deal-making process. Whatever your state representatives are, whatever your assemblymen people are, whatever your city council members, whoever they are, they were shut out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think that's what I'm going to bring it back to the affordability piece of it real quick, and then I'll talk a little bit about the transparency part of it. So if any local people had been involved, there would have been opportunity for community groups and for local electeds who know the issues on the ground really well to say, look, this is going to seriously impact affordability. And it's really going to impact people's ability to be able to stay in not just in the neighborhood, but in Queens. Like, what we've seen across the board, and this is nationally, it's not just in New York, but when there's a large scale new development and affordability changes, not just in the surrounding blocks, but it has a major ripple effect. And in Queens, unlike Brooklyn or unlike parts of Manhattan, and this is why it actually is it cuts deeper that it's in Queens because it's been able to stay affordable. We have way fewer protections for tenants because we have less rent regulated stock. Queens was built up later than Brooklyn or Manhattan. As a result, our housing stock is newer. As a result of that, it has very little regulation on it. And so landlords can do whatever they want with it. It means that the second that there's an opportunity for them to charge more, they're going to charge more. And it creates an incredibly precarious situation for people, especially people here who are, you know, a ton of working people, working class folks, low-income people, immigrants, people of color, people who don't necessarily speak English or know their rights in a way, who are the most vulnerable to being displaced, is what I mean to say. So if the local electeds had had any part in this process, community groups on the ground would have been able to push them to make a different sort of decision or to at least put in some sort of regulatory framework to make sure that there were some protections for tenants. And like fixed income homeowners, really.
Right, right. And the interesting thing is we're talking about this, and these would all be issues if Amazon just decided to move into Queens. Mm-hmm. I don't even think we're really even getting to the what is it that I think altogether between the two cities, and this is something I didn't even mention. Amazon snuck in their little two city announcement with Arlington and New York. That there was actually a third location they were opening, not technically a headquarters, but more Amazon office space, in Nashville, Tennessee. So across all three of these cities, they're getting something like $5 billion in subsidies. Yep. To come to these locations. And again, we're talking about the type of the type of people that Amazon is going to bring in, how these are offices, and I want to really really stress here, these aren't warehouses. Amazon's already got those all over the country. These aren't the sort of jobs that are going to go to people who maybe are currently making less than living wage somewhere, and now they're going to work for Amazon making $15 an hour, which is still too low if you ask me, obviously. But again, no, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about jobs that are, high up in the tech industry that we're probably going to mostly see people from the West Coast jumping on a plane and moving their family to New York to take the job here and at the Amazon headquarters too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee that any of the – so first of all, it's supposed to be that between 25,000 to 40,000 jobs over the course of 10 years. New York State gave $1.75 billion – New York State and City gave $1.75 billion in subsidies to create 25,000 to 40,000 jobs, new jobs, that are not necessarily going to go to existing New Yorkers. And I want to make clear, New York's job market, $25,000 jobs is not very many jobs. There are currently 4 million people employed in New York City alone. So that includes commuters, but that means that there are 4 million jobs here right now. 25,000 to 40,000 jobs over the course of 10 years is a drop in the bucket, right? It's a drop in the bucket as far as employment opportunity goes. But simultaneously, we're not even getting those jobs. We're not guaranteed those jobs going to New Yorkers, right? So we're spending $1.75 billion and bringing this company here, saying that we're going to create economic growth and economic opportunity for New Yorkers. New Yorkers aren't guaranteed those jobs in any way, shape, or form, especially not people who are going to be most deeply impacted by Amazon showing up here. And we just gave away a ton of money that we could be using on badly needed schools, infrastructure, and deeply affordable housing. That's not a good deal. That's just not a good deal.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's just not.
Right. I think I saw something like if it's 25,000 jobs or something like that, we could have given something like $60,000 to each of those people to go out and, like, I don't know, start their own business, do something, and they would probably actually end up, think about 25,000 people going out trying to start something on their own. Let's just say a single digit percentage of that ended up being successful, translating to jobs that would have been created for small businesses, creating these jobs for local New Yorkers. We would have been hiring more people, I bet, than we would have than we're going to now.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part of it, and this is where I want to bring in the tax incentives part of it. And So one of the major tax programs that Amazon tapped into was the Excelsior Jobs Fund. And so that is something that I was arguing with someone about Amazon coming in here, and they said, they tapped into the Excelsior Jobs Fund. Anybody could tap into that, like a worker co-op could tap into that. And it's like, yeah, you're right. A worker co-op could tap into that, and those are the people who need to be tapping into it. Amazon is the world's largest corporation. Why do they need the same kind of subsidy? Why are they tapping into the same kind of tax breaks that are reserved for, spurring economic growth and activity in sectors and with people who otherwise wouldn't be able to do it on their own, right? So not only is Amazon tapping into like dipping into New York State's public funds, but also it's taking that opportunity away from someone else,
Right.
right? So that's a part of it that people aren't talking about. That opportunity is then limited for other folks.
One other thing, actually, because I'm remembering your 4 million, 4 million job, 4 million people are employed in this city stat, and I'd seen you tweet that out, and you said something like, "It's actually, the amount of people employed in this city are more than the population
Los Angeles.
of Los Angeles."
Yeah.
Wow.
So Los Angeles is the second largest city in the United States. Again, this is for scale, because every time I have this conversation with people, they say 25,000 new jobs, 40,000 new jobs. That's so great for New York. I mean, New York is gigantic. And this isn't to like, this isn't any kind of bragging kind of situation. It's just the truth. Our scale is just different. So 4 million people are employed in New York City. 4 million people live in all of LA. Just think about it that way.
That
New York
is
City
nuts.
is 8.5 million people, right? Like that is it, it's it, LA is the second largest city, and it is, I think probably now it's probably closer to around 5 million people, but it's like almost half the size of New York as far as population goes. So the impact that this kind of stuff has on our like the scales are just different. So when we're thinking about city to city comparisons, it is useful to have nationwide kind of examples and learn from each other. But the way that New York functions, the market is just so different from other places.
Right. I mean, it's New York City. Again,
Yeah.
like we mentioned in the beginning, like Amazon should have, let's look at it this way, 'cause I see some people in the comments on YouTube talking about, they purchase from Amazon or whatever. So, you know what? I mean, I do too. It's, with these tech companies, it's really hard because a lot of them do provide a service. Amazon provides cheap goods and you could receive them extremely fast. And when you're most of this country looking to save money wherever they can, and that's why McDonald's is so successful, because they provide a whole meal for $2. That's why Walmart and Target and Amazon are so successful, because they're able to provide goods for extremely cheap, much cheaper than other small businesses or other companies can afford to do so. But so it's completely understandable that people would purchase and be fans of certain services. I get that. But so let's look at it this way. Let's even give Amazon the benefit of the doubt here. What could they do actually to, say they really wanted to move to New York? What could they do that would fix things here? How could they fix things here? Personally, I say the first thing they should do, and you're the expert, so I want you to really, tell me I'm wrong or right and give me more, is obviously, and this is not going to happen in a million years, they should say we won't take the subsidies. First step.
That's what I was gonna say. I mean, expert or no expert, that is the thing that my gut says, and that's the thing that community groups that have been doing this work on the ground have been saying too. And I want to plug the work that community groups have been doing, because they've been having this conversation even before Amazon came here. So the Justice for All Coalition in Long Island City, they've been doing this work and trying to stop unfettered development. Queens Neighborhoods United, they've been saying this too. They're coming out and saying, look, we don't want Amazon here at all. So if they do come here, there's no they shouldn't be taking any of the subsidy. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that it's something that's going to ever happen, but I agree with you that that's what would be the most helpful thing.
Right.
As
Amazon should pay us to give them PR, public relations
exactly.
advice. They
Right,
should
exactly.
pay you and me specifically.
I'm ready. I mean,
I will take a percentage of that $1.5 billion subsidy they're receiving.
Yeah, all of us as people who live in Queens, especially, I mean, I tweeted this out before, but especially those of us who have to take the 7 train every day and pass by Jeff Bezos's new helipad, we should be getting, you know, we should be getting a cut out of that. We should be getting free helicopter rides to and from work.
Right. But before we get to the crazier stuff in this deal,
yeah.
would just returning the subsidies, you said there are groups who clearly that wouldn't be enough and totally understandable. What let's say they give away this, they say we won't take the subsidies. What's the next step for them to do if they absolutely want to move to New York but want to do right for the community?
Okay, so this is going to start getting a little bit into what they've offered. So they have said that they're offering a $15 million, or they're going to be building a $15 million workforce development center. That is not enough, number one. It's not going to do anything. Even if they have some training centers there, it doesn't guarantee that anybody who's being trained at that workforce development center is actually going to benefit from any of the Amazon jobs that are there. So let's talk about real local hire. Local hire is something that people hate to talk about. People always say that it's not legal. You know, it is. They could also put set-asides for doing both training and direct pipelines for folks from LaGuardia Community College, for people who are from the neighborhood, from Queensbridge. I mean, what they offer to Queensbridge is just downright insulting. They offered a job fair for 3 years. You know, if they want to do right by Queensbridge, fix Queensbridge's heat. Queensbridge is without heat and hot water right now. The day after they announced that Amazon is coming to the city, Queensbridge residents didn't have any heat or hot water. If people don't know right now, we had a huge snowstorm today. It's like 30 degrees out there right now. NYCHA is completely failing and has $0. But you know, I'm saying all this stuff, but like, fundamentally, I don't think any of it is helpful, because I don't think that the state should be relying on corporate money at all for basic infrastructural projects that people deserve, regardless of whether they have this gigantic company in their backyard or not. No, it's not that Amazon should be subsidizing any of this, or the state shouldn't be subsidizing Amazon, and Amazon shouldn't be subsidizing the state. People who live in Queens, people who live in New York, people anywhere, they deserve these basic things, like basic infrastructure and basic rights to good housing and good affordable housing, without having to trade in their neighborhoods and communities for something like Amazon to be coming in. Like, So I think the best.
Absolutely. I mean, the city clearly tells us, you know, Cuomo tells us all the time that we can't afford to do this with the subway, can't afford to do that. Take that billions of dollars that you're about to give away to Amazon and put it towards the subway. Fix the subway. Put it towards the infrastructure. Fix the heat in Queensbridge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And the other thing is that in the tax packages, so Amazon is not paying property taxes. And in New York, land is our most valuable asset. New York is an island, or like a collection of islands. And so land is extremely limited here, and that's why it's so expensive to build here. The fact that they're not paying property taxes is wild, but they're putting in money into something called a program called payment in lieu of taxes. So that's called the pilot program. So with the pilot program, they're basically putting, this is a very simplified explanation, but they're putting in a chunk of money into a pot that's reserved for infrastructural changes. So they're saying, okay, we're not going to pay the taxes, but they figured out a set amount that they're going to pay, that they negotiated with the state, and they're putting that into a pot of money that will go toward fixing roads, fixing sidewalks, fixing streetlights, fixing the sewer system. The sewer system in Long Island City, also, we didn't talk about this, can't handle another new big development coming in. So this pot of money is supposed to go to somewhere in Long Island City, and it's supposed to address infrastructural needs. But somewhere in Long Island City could just be their own campus. So that's not actually going to the neighborhood. Right. So they're doing a pilot program. Let's talk about what the geography of that, of those funds is too. That's a conversation that nobody's been able to have because there has been such little transparency around this deal.
Right. So let's get into some of this weird stuff now that we're talking about the terms of the deal. First, I think we should mention, actually, and this is something I saw on Twitter, and you know, it didn't even occur to me as I was reading through parts of the deal, is that if you look at the language, anything that the city is offering to Amazon, very clearly, the city must do this, the city guarantees this to Amazon, the city will absolutely do this for Amazon. It's set in stone, 100% Amazon's getting this from the city. Now, if you come across anything in the deal where Amazon is giving back to the community or giving back to the city or what Amazon's supposed to provide for the city, it's always, if everything turns out right, Amazon will do this. Yeah. If Amazon is able to, Amazon will try to attempt to do this. It's not set in stone. There's a bunch of qualifiers that have to come first before Amazon can deliver on whatever it is that they that's in that specific part of the deal. To me, that's just, you know, it should be a blight on Cuomo, de Blasio, anyone who was part of putting this deal together. Should be a shame that they couldn't get one guarantee out of this.
So part of that actually has to do with how the tax package is structured. So like the pilot program that I mentioned, all of that depends on if Amazon actually succeeds in doing well. So one example that we have in New York is Hudson Yards, which was a huge mega development that was built on the west side of Manhattan, which, you know, there was nothing, it was also manufacturing space and there wasn't a ton of development there. The city poured in and the state poured in a lot of money, the same sort of tax breaks in order to build Hudson Yards. And then the recession happened. So the 2008 recession happened. And the amount of money that they thought they were going to make on it immediately, they weren't able to. And so because of that, they weren't able to put in as much as they thought they would on the pilot into the pilot funds. And they weren't able to pay it off as quickly as they thought they would. And so the way that this tax deal is written, and this, I mean, I'm not an expert on the tax deal part of it, but the way that it's written, I think, accounts for that. It accounts for knowing that there's a possibility that Amazon could fail, and we're gambling on it. This is a gamble. This is the state and the city, really the state, though, taking public funds and public subsidies and gambling on Amazon to do well.
Right.
If Amazon doesn't do well, who is going to lose out the most? It's going to be us. It's right. Not going to be them.
I almost feel like, though, that doesn't mean, you know, Amazon almost doesn't qualify, though, for that, because of course they're going to do well in terms of, like, Amazon's not going anywhere, like the company as a whole.
Yeah.
But then also you look at, like, you know, I keep thinking of Scott Walker's wonderful Foxconn deal over in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And that little bit of news that came out right before the midterms that maybe even played a part in that midterm race where Scott Walker lost. But first of all, Scott Walker gave away huge subsidies to Foxconn to bring the company. Everyone knows Foxconn is the Chinese manufacturer that Apple uses to make iPhones and a number of their other products. Scott Walker gave them huge subsidies, I believe, even bigger than we're giving Amazon, to come to Wisconsin. And this bit of information that came out just a couple of weeks ago was that Foxconn couldn't find enough people to hire in Wisconsin to qualify for whatever subsidy, you know, the number of jobs they guaranteed to bring to Wisconsin to receive whatever it is they're receiving, they weren't hiring enough. So to fix that, they were literally bringing over current employees from China, executives or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they were moving into Wisconsin to work at the company there so they could hit those quotas. These yeah. companies will always find a way to get what they want. They'll find ways around it. Like, there's nothing written in this deal that says they have, like you said, that says they have to hire New Yorkers or people from within the community.
Yeah, and that's like the big problem with it. The fact that we gave away so much money hoping that it would trickle down to the people who need it most. Right. And that's what happened also in Wisconsin. And when I say it's a gamble, it's a major gamble, because fine, Amazon is going to do well. Fine, Amazon is always going to come out on top. But then the gamble is, will that actually end up helping the people who are not on top? And you know, at what, like what we've seen over and over again across the country is no. And we have really great examples from Seattle. We have really where Amazon was based before, and the homelessness crisis that came out of that and the displacement crisis that came out of that. And we have good examples in San Francisco and the Bay Area in general, with not just with Facebook and Twitter and other tech companies as well, where we this like vision for a great city leaves out the people from the city, right? You know? Yeah. And going back to what Amazon has promised, so let's talk about that and like the weird things, the weird parts.
Right.
Of
right. So let's get to, you mentioned it before. Let's just bring it up, 'cause I'm sure people are at the edge of their seat right now, waiting for us to mention this one, the helipad.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah. Part of the deal, there's one line in the MOU that says that the public partners understand that there's going to be a need for access to the development site, so they're going to help figure out a way to build in a helipad per FAA regulations, you know. But this is well.
I'm surprised they didn't promise to throw those out the window. Those regulations out the window for Amazon.
Totally. And there were a couple of people on the internet who said to me, "Well, you know, it just means that they're going to help them access the site, and Amazon's going to build the helipad. They're going to build a helipad on the site that we gave them $1.75 billion for, right? Like that helipad is subsidized. Jeff Bezos's helicopter rides are being subsidized by me and you right now." And the reason that I think everyone flipped out over that is because it's so egregious, and it is really like cartoon villain level styles of like thinking the world works, or demanding how that the world should work for you. And on top of it is that our subway infrastructure is just completely crumbling. So it'd be great to be putting the helipad money to the subways. The helipad sucks.
I look forward to riding the 7 train and looking up as I'm packed in like a sardine, looking up and seeing Jeff Bezos land his helicopter on his nice little helipad and look down on all us drones as we're standing on that subway. Right. I'm just getting depressed thinking about it. I'm like,
yeah, no. And so we're getting the helipad, or he's getting the helipad. They're getting the helipad. Somebody's getting the helipad. And so what are we supposed to be getting back? Right. Aside from the 25,000 to the 40,000 jobs, one thing that was promised to New Yorkers was a 600 seat school. And New York really needs new public schools. People were really excited in Long Island City. And people say, you know, it's so great that Amazon is going to be helping fund this public school. So I want to make clear that that was already part of a pre-existing deal. That was already going to happen. There was already a smaller scale neighborhood rezoning or rezoning that was going to happen a year ago before we knew that this deal was coming up, where a school had been promised to the community. Amazon also said that they were going to be giving New York City mixed industrial and light manufacturing space. That was also already promised. These are not new things. These are things that had been negotiated for and asked for way before Amazon was in the picture, but Amazon is just taking credit for them. Not only that, I want to mention that one of the sites, so there are like four parcels on which this campus is being built. A couple of them are publicly owned sites, so they were owned by the city initially. And on one of them, there was supposed to be this light manufacturing space slash art space. And then there was going to be affordable housing built on top. So the group that had agreed to that in negotiations with the city ended up scrapping that deal because they went into negotiations with Amazon. And they're still going to build the light manufacturing and art space. But instead of the residential, they're replacing that with office space. So we actually lost out in that package, you know.
Oh man.
In what was promised to us, we actually lost out on potential affordable housing. I could keep going into the weirdo details of it, but
well, this one doesn't exactly affect New York, but I brought it up before, the whole the fact that Amazon gets to rebrand a city name in Virginia. But also part of the Virginia deal is that they'll receive, Amazon will get Freedom of Information Act requests heads up. Whenever someone files a FOIA request that involves Amazon, the city will let Amazon know so they can rectify it or seek some sort of order to block it. Apparently, from what I understand, this is something that's now commonly being written into these deals with tech companies, which doesn't make it any less weird with in general, but that's ridiculous that the a government, you know, this governmental process is being interrupted in a way by, you know, there needs to be an extra step to give Amazon a heads up.
Yeah. I mean, what else is there to say about that? It's just evil. the fact that, and you might know a little bit more about this than I do, the details of it, the fact that Amazon also has worked with ICE, that's right. Another part of it. And, you know, always bringing it back to Queens. Queens is full of immigrants. Queens is the most heavily immigrant dense place in the city. It's the most linguistically diverse place in the entire world, linguistically diverse county in the entire world. So really welcoming this company with open arms, not just open arms, but begging them on our hands and knees to come to New York and to come to Queens in particular, while knowing that they engage in practices that are so harmful to immigrants and bringing them to a place that stands for immigrants, you know?
Right.
There's something to be said about that too.
Is this what you were talking about before? I just came across this article. Apparently this might be what you were talking about before, but Amazon made a big deal about the industrial businesses and the school and the green space that they were donating. This was already planned before Amazon.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what you're right. Okay. Just making sure. Yeah. I was wondering, maybe there was a second thing here that was,
no,
just, it wouldn't surprise me if there was even more to that.
I mean, there is more to it, because there, what we haven't talked about is the Plaxel family site. So there is a family, I don't even know if I should even get into this, but part of it is that the neighborhood, the rezoning that was going to happen earlier is because a family, the Plaxel family, who manufactures plastics, wanted to get rid of, they wanted to sell parts of the site, but they wanted to rezone it before they did. So they went into negotiations with the city and they figured out this big plan, which is a plan that you're referencing, the one that I mentioned earlier. And as part of the plan, there was going to be the housing and the green space, the Esplanade, and the school. But when Plaxel decided that they would be able to work with Amazon, that deal was scrapped. Yet those few components that we just talked about, the school, et cetera,
right,
they have remained. But Amazon is taking credit for something that was already supposed to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this one. I guess this is really the, like I said earlier, this is the cherry on top. And, you know, if you didn't live in New York and Arlington, then, you know, you, depending on what your feelings on this is, I guess, maybe you were upset Amazon wasn't coming to town. But it seems like mostly people were relieved Amazon wasn't coming to town, and they feel like they dodged a bullet. And in many ways, they did. Certainly. But as it's being pointed out, Amazon got a lot of data from all these towns and cities that sent in this application. Demographic information, information, I'm sure, about what the city has planned and how they would, how their funding, infrastructure details, really a plethora of information. And honestly, I can't think of a company that would benefit from this sort of information more than a company like Amazon, who literally is, physically on the ground all across the country because they deliver things, and them not specifically, but, they could use this information to possibly open up new, I don't know, Amazon sites or in terms of, the lockers or figure out delivery methods and more accurate delivery times to try to, I don't know, extort more money out of people to by getting them to join Prime because they could deliver in this amount of time now. How as someone who deals with this sort of data, what are some of the implications for Amazon having this data? Like, what could they possibly do with this data that they have on hundreds of cities now across the country?
I mean, there's the warehousing part of it. It's like it's because they do so much, there are lots of different things that they can do. So when I mentioned the warehousing part of it, it's the distribution sites. They can figure out where to build distribution sites. They can figure out where it's the cheapest to build distribution sites. And so in some cases, I mean, in some ways, I think that's an interesting point, because I think that in some ways it kind of reinforces which cities get the best options for like what is considered a good job. So a place like I mentioned Columbus, Ohio earlier. Columbus, Ohio, I think, is the kind of city that it would have made sense to have Amazon come there in some ways. I know that people don't want that. I don't think that subsidies should have necessarily been given, but bringing 25,000 to 40,000 jobs, if you have some sort of good local hire agreement in there and you have a workforce development agreement in there, workforce training in there, agreement in there, maybe it could be more useful to Columbus, Ohio. But if you're just if Amazon is just looking at the metrics and they decide actually Columbus, Ohio is only useful for these warehousing jobs, then they're just going to create more crappy jobs in those areas. And I want to just like step back and say I don't think any job is a crappy job, really. I don't think that cleaning houses or which is something that people in my family have done, or working in retail, those are bad jobs. It's only that those are jobs that aren't valued in a way where good wages and good healthcare.
Right, that's what you're talking about, the wages and the benefits. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that those are inherently bad jobs. They're not. But they know that Amazon knows that in certain markets that have, you know, weak union laws where they can operate very cheaply, they can keep continuing this model that they've perfected of paying people poorly, extracting the most labor out of them, and also, you know, making the most money off of that model.
You know, it's almost ridiculous how, like, you know, if Amazon just picked some sort of city where they would have, you know, that could have really used something like this. You know, I hate that, you know, that big companies can be looked at like this. Like, you know, really, it should be for any city, period, it should be a company wanting to go there and trying to figure out how they could benefit the community. But, you know, if we're gonna look realistically at the society and the world we live in today, late stage capitalism, you know, really what we're looking at now is at the very least, they could have went somewhere where, you know what, they could have brought a boom to a place that's struggling and could have really used this sort of spark, I guess you can say.
Yeah, I mean that, but the thing is that's why the data part of it is so compelling to what you're saying, because they can decide which environment is going to be most friendly to them, right? So it's not about even the company. Amazon could come into any company in the United States, in like the South or in the Rust Belt, and set up shop, and people are going to say this is going to be great for the people who live here. And it's not, unless there are some real regulations put into place to ensure that there's that the threat of displacement is mitigated, that people are actually able to tap into the resources that sort of company brings, and also that it's not being subsidized. That's the big kicker, right? So that was with that data, they were able to tell who was going to subsidize them the most, who was going to create a business-friendly environment. And that means a lot of different things, but it mostly just means exploiting people's labor and people's time. And so it comes down to what cities are willing to do to protect the people who live there. Not just cities, but entire regions. What a state is willing to do. And it comes down to whether governments and municipalities are willing to protect their people before they protect profit. And we know that that is extremely unlikely, you know? So it's not just about Amazon coming in and fixing all those things. It's about real protections being put into place for tenants, for workers, for everybody, for immigrants, for small businesses. It's about more than just relying on this one company or any company really to come in and provide basic things that people need regardless of where they're working or even where they're living, really.
Lena, thank you so much for joining me today. I think that's the perfect place to leave it. Folks, what's your Twitter again? It's LP Afridi, right? Folks, follow Lena there. Lena is the Director of Economic Development Policy at ANHD, which is the Association for Neighborhood and Housing Development. You know, Amazon, I guess, is coming to town, and there's nothing we could do about it. I guess maybe we'll be neighbors when we get pushed out to I don't know, at this point, I guess Suffolk County, Long Island is where we'll end up, you know?
We'll see. I got a lunch and drive.
Have a good night, Lena.
All right, you too. Take care.
I feel like I should have Lena on all the time, if anything, so she could tell everybody about the time when I was a rock star back in the day, you know?
Next time.
Right.
All right, good night.
Good night. All right, hold on, just shutting off the Skype. There we go. All right, everybody. You know, you could support this show by going to our Amazon affiliate link, and I kid, just, I guess I'm throwing double shade there, aren't I? I didn't even mean to throw shade at good old Sam Cedar, but I guess I just did that. Oh, well, that was meant to be an Amazon joke, but... folks, you can actually support this show by going to patreon.com/mattbinder and becoming a patron. I ask for $5 a month, but really you can give whatever you can afford to give. And lately, actually we've lost a few patrons, because, you know, financial difficulties this time of year, unfortunately. Like I mentioned last episode, we were always on an uptick. If you looked at a chart that showed the growth of this show on Patreon, it was going up each month, even if it was just by one or two people. We are now, for the first time, going down. And what can you do? If you can't afford to become a patron, please don't. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. But if you can afford to and you enjoy the show, patreon.com/mattbinder. I will thank you. And actually, everyone else who also enjoys this show but can't afford to give will thank you. Because I can't continue this show if there's not something coming in. Anyway, you can also support this show by giving us a review on iTunes. We actually got some great reviews recently. Written ones. I really appreciate that. I think those are great because they also really help the show get recognized and noticed. You could also support this show by spreading the word, letting your friends, family, your social media followers know. You can also support this show by hounding the IMs on the Majority Report and the Michael Brooks Show. I think I caused a little drama over there with my old pals over there when Sam actually retweeted it yesterday. I tweeted out how I'm looking at some of the comments about this. I tweeted because yesterday Majority Report announced their live show in January, and earlier, Michael Brooks had announced the Michael Brooks Show live show in February. And I joked that, you know, what the hell? How is Michael Brooks charging more than Sam Cedar for tickets to their respective live podcast shows? I swear the ego on that guy is what I tweeted out. And I knew it would get Michael, you know, I love getting under Michael Brooks' skin. I did that every day when I worked there at the Majority Report. There's nothing I miss more, actually. Out of all the things that I would do there, that's probably what I miss the most about working there. And, you know, I just joking with them. I don't know why Michael's charging more. Probably has to do actually with the fact that Sam is doing the Majority Report live show under the Brooklyn Podcast Festival lineup. And I'm guessing they got a better deal with the venue, so they're able to charge less for the tickets because there's multiple different podcasts doing multiple different shows. I don't know. But I don't know. Even though Michael's base tickets are a little bit more expensive, dude's charging like triple the base ticket price for a VIP meet and greet. Who does this guy think he is? He's not going to listen to this, but still, I like imagining him listening to this and this bothering him. Ah, Michael knows I love him. Let's go to the YouTube comments. Renee says, Amazon tried building a warehouse in Chile and finally, or Chile, I should say, and finally decided on Colombia due to taxes and import laws. Renee says, I guess he lived in Trump's old neighborhood. He said, Jamaica Hills, Parsons Boulevard, represent. Dragon Slayer asks, Binder, where's my live punk show? Man, I haven't played, I used to play bass guitar and do vocals. I could still do punk vocals. Excuse me, I can still do punk vocals. That's something I could easily do. But man, I haven't picked up the bass in a long time. Probably I could pick it up and it would just naturally come back to me to play. But I don't feel confident enough to play in a band. Bass guitar, at least. If any band out there wants my vocal capabilities, please contact me. That I could still handle. Renee says, Matt has a bass player kind of face and cool demeanor. Well, you called it, I guess. I wasn't a great bass player, though. I was a good bass player. The rest of my band would say, like, we would say, like, the guitarist and the drummer were the musical talent of the band because they were good at what they did musically. And me and the lead singer were the entertainment because we were the ones who were falling and flying all over the stage. That was my job. To be a fool. Oh, my dad jumped in to say that I was the bass player. Renee says, hello, Papa Binder. You get to go on the podcast to talk about your political life. And then my dad says, my dad lets everyone know that my band was called IAFC. It's a fucking catastrophe. So you can see there's like a through point. If that's the right term I'm thinking of, between the name of my band, the name of this show, Doomed, you know, I like to think positively, keep people thinking optimistically. Ever the optimist over here, you know? Renee says, great name for a podcast too. I know, that's sort of where I got Doomed from. I was like, do I call it Catastrophe? And I was like, nah, I don't want to be too... You know, and then there's that Rob Delaney show that's big now called Catastrophe. My band's name was named before that the show was out. But now people who don't know about my band would just assume I was taking it from the show. So I went with Doomed. I could have easily called the band We're All Doomed. Brett says, hey y'all, I put down Red Dead Redemption 2 to watch the stream. That's how much I like Doomed. Thanks, Brett. I really appreciate that. Just for you, in fact, I'll, bring over my horse, throw on a cowboy hat, and I'll, do the rest of the show as Red Dead Redemption 2 cosplay. How about that? Renee says, gotta play that with Matt, Brett, to talk Dutchess and Cat Pop. I haven't played Red Dead Redemption. I missed that boat. Games that take a long time to play, like you know, long storylines, lots of things, not like a quick online multiplayer. We could jump in, play a few rounds, and jump out. Those games I will never play again. I really should figure out how to stream from the consoles, because you guys could watch me play Gears of War, which I love to play when I would play it. I was thinking, actually, recently, I was a big Warcraft 3 player. Never got into World of Warcraft. My girlfriend was a big World of Warcraft player, but even then, I couldn't get into it. But Warcraft 3, I was addicted. And when I saw that Blizzard is going to remix, remaster, whatever they're calling it, put Warcraft 3 out with all new graphics, I got really excited about that, and it made me want to pull out the old Warcraft 3. That I could probably stream right off the bat. because I could just play that on my computer and stream it from there and don't have to, and I actually have the Elgato, plugin thingy, the I, whatever it's called, to stream video games. But I have my setup where the TV is, where my computer is. I also don't believe my MacBook Pro can handle all that. I don't have a gaming rig, as the kids call it. But I do think my computer could handle Warcraft 3 and streaming. That I will look into. If you guys... Are people still playing Warcraft 3? I mean, they will be very soon if they aren't. But is there a Warcraft 3 streaming community out there? Renee says, my ex-wife is working on public housing. Weird for a Trump habilitating centrist. Stop talking to me when I refer to Ben Carson as Mr. Sleepy. How he'll do any progress regarding urban housing development. Ten-foot man says, Mr. Sleepy has a lot of HUD problems on his gifted hands, LOL. Excuse me, let me, put my... As I, fix my, you know, it's snowing, it was snowing today. My, you know, the old nose and sinuses, all that fun stuff is, folks, I'm telling you, I'm getting sick. That's what I'm saying here. Renee continues, I grew up there in the 70s. The neighborhood went to hell due to the crack war, but the East Indians might bring it back. Oh, you're talking about Jamaica. All right, 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 right. Downtown Jamaica, Renee says. Used to be retail and small markets, right? I'm not familiar with what it... I'm vaguely familiar with that area. Brett asks, has anyone in chat not given Amazon money? I've spent thousands on Amazon. Yeah, your comment's the one I saw during the interview. It's hard to... Really, it's hard to not... If, you know, if you are someone on a budget, like pretty much every working class human being in this country is... How do you not use Amazon? We're stuck in this vicious cycle, really. The you know, some of these companies that do not so great things are able to offer cheap goods and services because they do these not so great things. And as much as I try to do the right thing, sometimes I can't afford something that I desperately need. You know, I'm even talking about the basics. I couldn't afford it if it wasn't for some of the prices that these companies are able to offer these goods and services at. You know, I try to cut back where I can. I don't need to use a car service personally. So I don't use Uber. I don't use those apps because I don't think they're great companies. My girlfriend, however, when she's out with the kid and she doesn't drive and she's not always somewhere where there's good public transportation, because I'm usually going from Queens to Manhattan and she's usually going places within Queens, she has to use some of these services sometimes. So, you know, we try to cut back where we can. But when it comes to Amazon, they offer so much. How do you not? Really, how do you not? You know, people who know me personally, you know, one of the jokes at the Majority Report where I would eat fast food, terrible food. I know it's not great for me, but it's cheap. Listen, if there was healthy food being offered for $3, $4 for a full lunch meal, then, you know, easily McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and Taco Bell would probably get my money every now and then and not every other day. But that's just how it is. I mean, unless there's some big changes in this country, I don't see how we escape this. It honestly makes me sad thinking and talking about it, but it's the cards were dealt. That's all I can really say right now. Maybe when it's earlier in the day, I can think of something more profound. earlier in the episode, I should say. Dissident Peasant was in the chat. It's me. 10 Foot Man says, love me some Dissident. Yeah, I don't know if you're still in there, Dissident, but what's up? Old Majority Report regular. Dissident Peasant says, isn't this not going to do anything, talking about Amazon, but jack up housing prices in the city? That's the worry. That's the thing that's already happening, as Lena said. Lena mentioned it. It's very, people are already buying up condos, condominiums, in the area without even seeing them. She said, "It's I'm you know, this is something that's everything affects everybody." I'm one of those people who believe that nothing really, at least policy-wise, politics-wise, tech-oriented, these tech company-oriented stuff. You know, none of this is in a bubble, but this is directly going to affect me. And I'm, you know, as someone who uses Amazon and enjoys their services, and I've gotten a lot of good stuff from Amazon, and I've watched Prime Video and been entertained by that. You know, Twitch is owned by Amazon. If any of you watch Twitch, I don't even know if we even considered that as we're having this conversation. Every time you watch Twitch, that's an Amazon-owned company. I mean, when you give to your favorite Twitch channels and Twitch takes a cut, you know, Amazon, that's Amazon. I mean, right now we're on YouTube, and I'm not making any money off of this. This isn't a monetized video. But, you know, if YouTube puts a video on here, they're going to get a cut, and that's Google. It's, you know, these companies give and they take, but they're taking too much, and they're not giving enough. Kennedy says, I am a Wall Street banker. I am a real estate investor. I am an heir to a massive fortune. because Renee was saying earlier, I'm a Gambino. I'm a Bezos. I'm a Saudi. Renee brings up just like JP Morgan. Is there a JP Morgan City? Edward Norden says, I wonder how long it's going to take for corporations to buy land and separate us into sections. Yes. Not there says pure ideology. Renee says, I'm a plutocrat. The John says, I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing here? Says the John. Brett, maybe they'll rename Texas to ExxonMobil at some point. Texaco, says 10-foot man. Renee says, USA patent pending. The John says, Dish Texas. All right, guys. Go through all that fun city renaming. Neo Geo says, politicians want the big donations. 10-foot man says, I thought Disney fixed New York. The Disneyland workers are always striking for a living wage. Ten-foot man says, wow, I had no idea of those numbers, being an L.A. guy all my life. Jeebus, two times L.A. Yeah, when I saw Lena tweet that out about L.A., about how there are more employed people in New York than L.A., in L.A.'s population as a whole. That's stunning. That's stunning. I don't know what else to say about it. That is stunning. 10-foot man says, yes, the concentration factor is the thing. Renee talking about how it's spread out much like Santiago, Chile, talking about L.A. Renee also says, helicopter rides has a bad reference to the Pinochet Pepe unity. Yeah, I didn't think about that. 10-foot man says, Nikolai, I don't know how to say that last name, I'm sorry, had a fun spin in a chopper. Right. All right. Oh, Oh, yeah, that. Okay, I know what you're talking about, but I still know how to say that last name. Brett says, nice plug for Sorry to Bother You, Renee. Tenfoot Man says, we need another live FaceTime segment featuring Renee. I thought your call was fascinating. I hope we can make that happen again. Yeah, that call was great, Renee. The only issue is I think we were waiting for to talk about something else, and then so I sort of had to cut it short. But yeah, definitely, we'll get another feed going, and we'll get you back on. We should do something like, I don't know, like the midterms feed I did. For people who just listened to the podcast, I didn't put the midterm live stream that I did late the night of the midterms up on podcast because it was a very video-oriented, visually-based episode because I was watching these right-wing streams like H.R. Goodman on InfoWars, and it just wouldn't translate as audio only. So if you didn't see that and you're interested, you can check that out on YouTube. But yeah, we will probably do more YouTube-only live streams while still doing the regular weekly show that features a guest and then your comments and questions from the YouTube stream chat right after. Brett says helipad or helipad. Yeah. Brett says all the tiny ants on the ground. Right. Renee says, privatize the USPS. I mean, that's really what Republicans would like, to be quite honest with you. Brett says, I stopped paying for Prime, but that's not saying much because I still have access to it through family members. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's hard to not take advantage of some of these services. That's just the sad reality of it, isn't it? Really? I wish I could just give up and not give some of these companies money. I wish I could. Like I said, I try to cut back where I can, though. Brian says, the only upside is that now New Yorkers can hate techies as much as people from the Bay Area do. Well, you also have to understand that this isn't the first time tech has come to New York. And we have plenty of tech bros here in New York already. You know, we have a big Google building here. Facebook has offices. Twitter has offices. Tons of tech companies are based in New York. The whole thing really here is exactly where Amazon is moving into. How they went about doing it. How much they're getting out of it from the state and the city. And really just how much the city's infrastructure and transportation system is already strained for them to be coming in and doing this. It's all those things combined that created this perfect storm of bad PR for Amazon at the very least, looking at it from their perspective. Sean says, okay, Matt, time for some self-promotion. Not There says, Sam hasn't had an Amazon affiliate link for at least a year. Really? He stopped doing that? I haven't listened to a full Majority Report episode in probably at least a year. I actually tune in quite regularly. No, quite regularly. I tune in at least probably once a week for sections of the better half. I usually miss out on the guest. And I don't listen to the entire better half, as you can tell. I do watch a lot of the clips, though. It's hard. I mean, Brian says, dude, that was priceless. I guess talking about my whole thing there when I was knocking Michael. Renee says, you like the revenge of the prodigal son. Brett says, all right, Matt, I'll actually be proactive in sharing the show now. Renee says, you saw my reply, Matt. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Brian says, Brooks is selling them cheap to patrons first. Well, that's nice of him. Renee says, that was promotion. Blah, blah, blah says, ha, 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 funny. Maybe rent for the location is higher. We're talking about when I was discussing Sam and Michael's live shows. Renee says, don't get me started on the paywall for calls. There's a paywall for calls. Brett says, ha, ha. Renee says, it's them sexy Eddie Murphy sweaters. The Yacoubian left headquarters. Talking about Michael Brooks show. Kennedy says, I have tiny hands, so I'm cursed to be terrible on the bass forever. I'm an okay guitarist, though. I could never do the guitar. I tried to play guitar first, and I just couldn't. I mean, maybe if I put more had more time to sit down and really, but I ended up just picking up a bass, and it just came to me quite naturally with the bass, actually. I never really learned to play in terms of reading music or anything like that. I would just, you know, with my band, me and my guitarist would come up with riffs and make songs together like that. If I came up with it, you know, he would be able to figure it out just by looking at it and listening to it. If he came up with the hooks, then he would show me what to play. Because again, I wasn't, you know, I was good at putting songs together, but not good at like reading and writing music. I wrote the lyrics. I wrote pretty much all the lyrics. We're a political punk band. Renee says it's punk bass, please. It's not like you need to be Peter Hook or Mike Watts. Yeah, no, punk bass is, please, don't give me any credit. Although I will say that we did try to do this thing because it was just one guitarist where I sort of would also have like lead parts on bass. You know, we go back and forth on that. But yeah, most of my stuff, very simple. Also because I needed to sing. Singing is giving me too much credit. I needed to do vocals. Because me and the lead vocalist, we both really were lead vocalists. We would go back and forth. You know, like a lot of punk bands do. Like I will try to pull up some music and get you guys some copies of that stuff. I was quite proud of our music, and our live shows. All right, I can't do this anymore. You guys are making me sad. those were the days. I'm 32 now. Doomed is a good name for a band, and leaving Red Dead Redemption is serious dedication. It says blah blah blah. There is a punk band called Doom, more like a, you know, like a D-beat sort of like crusty punk type band, but there is a band called Doom. In fact, it was one of the things that came up that I was worried about when I was calling the show Doom, but I thought, you know, there's a video game named Doom. It was far enough off the, and then really the whole name of the show is Doomed with Matt Binder. Brian says, dude, Gears is old school. Yeah, that's my favorite of these newer games, though. That's how you can tell how far behind I am. But yeah, I love Gears of War, the whole series. I think the multiplayer on that is fantastic, great. One of my favorite games to play. I play Fortnite with my brother when I go over to visit him. I play probably no more than, 30, 45 minutes. And I play with my 3-year-old son with the other remote pretending to play with me. So I'm not really getting in like a full video game sesh there, guys. I don't have much time to play video games, unfortunately. I wish I did. And I'm not saying I'm important and it's just how it is. I'm unimportant and have no time. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's possible, but I guess you can check on Twitch for Warcraft 3. Cesarius88 asks, does Nomiki Konst have a shot at the public advocate in New York? I don't know. I hope she does. New York is weird, man. New York is weird. We're really weird when it comes to our politics. You know, if you're part of the Democratic Party machine here in New York, you just have an upper hand that's almost impossible to overcome, which is why it's such a big deal that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat Joe Crowley. And being that she did, I don't know if anyone else will ever be able to break through, because I think a lesson was learned there. I'm happy she did. But that's just, I'm just telling you the reality. Derek Reif says, I always thought Bill de Blasio was more progressive. Is there a pattern of him doing shit like this? Yeah, unfortunately, he's been disappointing. We not enough time to go more into the Bill de Blasio, but I mean, I voted for him for the second term. I don't regret that. We didn't really have, he was the most progressive. He's been a disappointment. And he doesn't even come out and support the progressives when they're running. You know, didn't back Bernie in the primaries. Didn't back Cynthia Nixon in the primaries. I mean, Brian says, all you need really need is bass and drums. Renee says, imagines Mike doing a bass off a la Scott Pilgrim. Neo Geo said, de Blasio endorsed Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders, remember? Yeah. Renee says, Cuphead was so promising. Brian says, any game where you can chainsaw dudes in half is good, yes. And that's the show today, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode, everybody. Support the show at patreon.com/MattBinder, iTunes review. I forget what I usually say. I don't know. Tell people about the show. That's simple. Subscribe too on iTunes, even if you listen to the podcast. Subscribe. Let people know that you listen to the show when you're sharing your favorite podcasts. Let's leave with this. Renee says, de blah blah Blasio. See you all next time on Doomed.